Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It. I'm Allison Stewart, and Bright Eyes have a new album.
Well, they better save some space for me in that growing cottage industry where selfishness is currency. People spend more than they make. So I wrap my head in bandages from a string of happy accidents. Guess maybe I asked for it, but who am I to say? The closing bell death tolls, hear the market crash. A crying trader swears he'll get out of the game. The cowboy drinks himself to death fresh out of rehab, while they're loading all the rifles on the range. Look up at the Everest, look down in that Mariana Trench. Look now as the crumbling 4-5 falls down, oh, when the big one hits.
That song's called Mariana Trench, from Down in the Weeds Where the World Once Was, the first album in 9 years from the band Bright Eyes. Founded by Connor Overson in 1995, Bright Eyes released a breakthrough album in 2000 called Fevers and Mirrors, which showed off Overson's storytelling skills and his distinct vocal style and precipitated his rise to indie stardom. Their catalog also spans the Bush-era protest song, When the President Talks to God, and their less somber, wedding-friendly hit, First Day of My Life. After their album, The People's Keys, came out in 2011, the band took a hiatus, during which Connor Overst worked with solo albums and side projects, including Better Oblivion Community Center, his duo with friend of all of it, Phoebe Bridgers. Now, Overst and his bandmates, Mike Mogus and Nate Wolcott, have reunited and released an album with enough of the band's classic sound to make fans very, very happy. Rolling Stone says it, quote, reminds us why Connor Overst was one of the best singer-songwriters of the 2000s. But Down in the Weeds also treads new ground, exploring themes of aging and loss, the kind of stuff that makes sense for a band celebrating its 25th anniversary. We are so happy to have Connor Overst join us for an All of It listening party. Connor, nice to meet you.
Hey, Allison, thanks for having me.
Can we do the who, what, where, when, and why of this? Do all the five big questions first. Whose idea was it?
I guess Nate Wolcott and I was at his house here in L.A. For a sort of a holiday party. This would have been 2017. And it was one of those, you know, we were all feeling pretty festive. And it kind of just fell out of my mouth, you know, like, we should make a new record. And we snuck into the bathroom and we called Mike Mogus, who was in Omaha. And he claims he doesn't actually remember the conversation, but he agreed. And then we had to circle back a couple days later and make sure we were all serious about it. And then we started writing and demoing in the spring of 2018. And we spent like a year kind of putting the music together, and then in 2019 we spent another year, you know, properly recording it and getting all the musicians together, and then it's finally, we finished it, I guess we mastered it like February of 2020, so we just got in under the wire as far as the pandemic and stuff.
When it just tumbled, you said kind of just tumbled out of your mouth, had it been rattling around in your brain for a while before it tumbled out, or... was that just really of the moment?
I think deep down we all knew we wanted to do it again at some point. I mean, it wasn't like we all, you know, the three of us are really close friends and we were never estranged or anything like that. And they have helped me with my different projects, and Mike and Nate do a lot of film and TV scores together over the years. So we were always interacting, you know, both friendship wise and musically. And so it wasn't super dramatic, but I think it was kind of, I think the two reasons were, one, there was sort of this time where our different projects were winding down. Like Nate had been on tour with the Red Hot Chili Peppers for like a few years, and that was kind of coming to an end. And Mike was in between, you know, he produced his records all the time, and I was, you know, kind of, I guess the Better Billion stuff was still happening, but it was, anyway, there was like a logistical element. And then also I think just for the three of us, like in our personal lives, you know, we'd all kind of, I don't know, been through a lot of stuff. And then it felt like a nice place to kind of go home to, you know. It's like, it's obviously great to collaborate with new people and have new experiences, but our thing, you know, since we've been doing it for so long, there's like a level of trust and comfort and kind of, you know, like kind of like going home kind of thing. And so that was, I think, attractive to all of us at that point in our lives.
How did putting a big old chunk of space between your last recording and this current one, how did it change your perspective or your songwriting in any way?
Well, I think the big difference with this album is with the past Bright Eyes records, not 100% of the time, but for the most part, I would come with finished songs, and then Michael and Nate would step in, and obviously we'd arrange it and decide on production and musicians and all that together. But this, like, when we decided to make a new record, I really felt like it was important to make it as collaborative as possible. And so these songs were written, you know, we wrote them together. And so a lot of them started with musical ideas or chord progressions that Nate or Mike would give to me, and then I would, you know, just kind of live with them and come up with vocal melodies and lyrics. And even the ones that I kind of wrote more myself, I would sort of turn those over to those guys. And like, you know, they're both more sophisticated musically than I am. You know, I tend to write like cowboy chords, like, you know, like good, you know, good example, like that, the first kind of real proper song on the record, the Dance and Sing. It's like, when I wrote that, you know, I wrote that kind of by myself at first, and it was, you know, it's like, whatever, it's like a folk kind of, whatever, Woody Guthrie kind of thing. And then I gave it to Nate, you know, who's accomplished jazz musician and went to music school, and then he did a lot of chord substitutions, you know, chords that I don't know, like, you know, whatever, turning like a D into like a D minor ninth or some something like that. And then all of a sudden, you know, it sounded like a, you know, Louis Armstrong song to me, you know. It's like it just sort of transformed. And so it's, you know, it's, I feel really lucky to have, you know, two, I think, in my opinion, sort of bona fide musical geniuses, although they're incredibly neurotic and frustrating sometimes to work with, but they're both really talented. So I feel lucky to have them, you know, in my corner making my songs more interesting.
Let's listen to that track, Dance and Sing, so our audience can hear what you're talking about. This is Bright Eyes, Dance and Sing.
See the Coast Guard come and save the drowning men. Out by Catalina Island, they abandoned ship. All the news trucks piled up with starts and fits. Coming from Point Doom. It's the last ditch effort, makes no sense to try. Put more gas on the tires, put more wood on the fire. Warm your hands up, cause we'll probably be here a while. If you want the honest truth, don't turn your cheek away. Please don't resuscitate. Make an example out of me. Cause all I can do is just dance on through and sing.
That is Dance and Sing from Down in the Weeds Where the World Once Was from Bright Eyes. My guest is Connor Overstreet. That was some beautiful, lush orchestration going on there at the end.
Yeah, that's Nate Walcott's handiwork. He's an amazing composer. Like I said, they do a lot of stuff for film and TV, and he writes arrangements for different people's albums. And so, yeah, that's always an exciting part, because he'll demo it just on, you know, keyboards and things like that, and then we'll talk about changes that we want to make. And then it all kind of comes down, for the orchestral part, it all kind of comes down to just a couple days like we go to Capitol here, you know, the classic old studio, and, you know, hire like 30 people, like pickup orchestra, and it's super intense and expensive for 2 days. And you're like, you know, everyone's like, how's this going to come out? And then, yeah, it's just beautiful to hear it when it's finally played on real instruments by humans. And, it's one of the more, exciting parts of the process.
It was interesting to say you collaborated more on this record, because collaboration, it kind of can be a sign of maturity or even generosity that you are willing to let other people into the process. Do you think you've evolved in that way, in either way, either in terms of maturity or generosity in your songwriting?
I've always enjoyed collaborating, and even Bright Eyes, as a project, or, you know, it's the three of us are definitely the band, but obviously we don't have a consistent rhythm section, for example. Like this time it was like Flea and John Theodore played like drums and bass, which was amazing. But we always had different people on all our records. So there's been a certain amount of experimenting and collaborating on all the albums. But I think that's probably true as I've gotten older, like learn to let go of the reins a little bit more. Right. Obviously doing the record with Phoebe was really similar in the sense of like, you know, it's two songwriters trying to come to a consensus about what we think is, you know, cool or valuable about a song. And I think that it's, you know, hopefully the idea is it's greater than the sum of its parts, you know, when you let people come into the process.
I'm speaking with Bright Eyes singer-songwriter Connor Oberst. We're talking about the band's new album, Down in the Weeds, Where the World Once Was. We'll continue the conversation after a quick break. This is All of It. I'm Allison Stewart. We're back with Connor Oberst from Bright Eyes. We're talking about the new album, Down in the Weeds, Where the World Once Was. I want to talk about the record some more, but I have to play this Conan clip that you were part of. You were part of this really funny sketch on Conan O'Brien, and you play yourself, and you're such a good sport in this, and you're sort of talking about a later in life career shift, and you've become a PA on the Conan O'Brien show. Let's take a listen, and we'll talk about it on the other side.
Well, I sort of stumbled into the role of being the voice of the emo indie rock movement, but that was just to pay the bills. Really, I wanted to break into late night television production. I guess you could say I'm the Happy Gilmore of emo. Hi, my name is Connor Oberst, and I'm a production assistant at Conan. What I love about TV production is no one gives me special treatment here just because I was a famous musician. You have to earn it.
Hey, Amy, how's it going?
Can it, music freak.
It's just so cool to see how a TV show works.
So funny. It goes on and on. Were you always able to not take yourself too seriously, or is that just one of these things that come as we all grow up?
You know, I think my friends can attest that I've always enjoyed a good laugh, and I think the kind of music I make, you know, can definitely be construed as, you know, self-serious, and, you know, especially like the early albums, that's obviously like I do take what I do seriously as far as songwriting. And, you know, I think like when I was first starting, like in the, you know, kind of the 90s and stuff, there was this like slacker sort of attitude, like everyone's supposed to be like, oh shucks, I don't really play in a band, or I'm gonna stare at my shoes, you know what I mean? And yeah. I feel like myself and my friends, my circle of friends that were all in bands coming up out of Omaha, I don't know, we just had a different attitude, which was like, if we're gonna do this, like, let's do it to the fullest and take it seriously, you know? And so I think, you know, I got called pretentious a lot, and, you know, our albums are, you know, at times over the top conceptually and things like that, you know? So I can see how that maybe was an impression, but to be honest, like the whole time we were you know, we were also messing around and joking around and having laughs. And so, yeah, humor is, I think, one of the best things in the world, you know, best medicine there is. So, yeah.
Oh, you have good acting chops, by the way. That goes on. It's funny. It's really funny. But let's talk. Go back to music. Forced Convalescence is the next track I want to play. What should we be listening to or for?
Well, I think this is, like I mentioned before, this is a good example of kind of utilizing the other collaborators besides myself and Michael and Nate. You know, like I mentioned, obviously Flea from the Chili Peppers and John Theodore, who's his day job is in Queens of the Stone Age drummer, but he was in Mars Volta and a lot of other amazing bands playing drums. And then it's like a legit gospel choir, which I don't know if we've ever utilized in a record before. That was a new one for us. We have a few new ones on this. We have bagpipes on the record. That was a new one.
I knew those were bagpipes. I knew it. I thought, like, is this a weird sample? That's so funny. Where'd you find a bagpipe player?
We were in Omaha for that session, and we just straight up like Googled bagpipes Omaha, and we found these gentlemen that were, you know, I don't know, older gentlemen. I think they're called Omaha Pipes and Drums, and their main gigs are like funerals and parades and things. I don't think they'd ever been in a studio, so we kind of had to explain to them that, like, no, you do have to wear the headphones because the music is already recorded, you know. And but they were very sweet. They did a good job on that song. But yeah, this one is I think those are kind of the elements in the recipe. And it's a song about kind of, obviously, what the title implies, being sort of confined to bed and left with your thoughts, I guess.
Let's take a listen. This is Bright Eyes with Forced Convalescence.
Went out of town for the weekend with my children, built some castles in the sun, catastrophizing my birthday, turning 40, ended up like everyone. There's no escaping the housework or the bank clerk. Egyptian sheets, the circle's working, it's fighting my fantasy. In the dark, at a distance, I see everything at once. Feel the wind through the window, and I'm over.
Forced Convalescence from Bright Eyes. My guest is Connor Oberst. The name of the new record is Down in the Weeds Where the World Once Was. Had to let that one play all the way out. You know, it's sort of interesting. Lil Peep, Post Malone, and the late Mac Miller have all put out covers of Bright Eyes songs. What do you think's going on there? What do you think is... what's the conduit between Bright Eyes and hip-hop? Is it just that it's music?
You know, I'm not sure. I mean, I think it's incredible, and I love it that it's seeping into other genres. I mean, I think, you know, I think there is a correlation between folk music, which I think, you know, fundamentally, I've always considered myself a folk musician or a folk singer, whatever. Like, I write words to pretty simple melodies, and but I think, I don't know, I guess attention to the lyrics, you know, obviously that's a huge part of hip-hop, you know, is just the language. And so I think that you know, is a parallel. I mean, I definitely, you know, I love hip hop and have since I was, you know, kid. So, I think we've, you know, in our own way, we've incorporated production ideas and, you know, beats and rhythms from those records that we liked from that genre. So, yeah, I don't know. I think there's all, you know, there's all kinds of music and, you know, especially I feel like this day and age, everything's kind of intersecting at such a rapid pace that, you know, maybe it is all kind of fusion at this point.
Well, I wanted to ask about Pan and Broom, because that sort of seems like it's part of this conversation, because there's a sample in it from Hotline Bling, or a beat anyway. It's a beat, right?
Yeah. You know, I'm going to admit something here, which is, and people are going to be like, that's not true. But, and maybe I have, like in an Uber or something, but I've honestly never heard that song. But everyone says that about the, about Pan and Broom. But what that is, and maybe, because that's Drake, right?
Right, yeah.
Is that Drake?
It is, yeah. Yes,
okay,
sir.
So I'm going to assume that they probably used the same drum machine that we used, because we went to this place called Electrovox, the studio in L.A., partly because the guy that owns it has this incredible collection of, like, vintage drum machines and keyboards and just like this really esoteric equipment that you can't, it's kind of hard to find. And so I'd have to check with Nate or Mike as to the actual model of the, but it's like literally like, you know, from like the 70s drum machine or maybe like early 80s. And that's where we got our beat from. So I got to assume that maybe it's sampled or used, they use the same exact drum machine is my guess.
I think it's a good guess. Let's take a listen to Pan and Broom from Brad.
Came into view. I just fly through the light like the dust in the room. Reminisce. Walk through the zoo. And I sweep up my dreams with the pan and the broom. Now show comes after. Life just went down a drain of rainy days, way up in the rafters. I float where the organ fades.
That's Pan and Broom from Bright Eyes. The name of the new album is Down in the Weeds, Where the World Once Was. Okay, this one is for the hardcore fans. You always start your work with some sort of like found sound or some sort of skit, or so this time around it's called Page Turner's Rag, and it's a true rag, it's a true piano rag with a lot of different vocals. Can you explain it real quick?
Sure. So my friend and I opened a bar like 8 years ago in Omaha called Page Turner's Lounge, and another friend of ours every Thursday at happy hour would play ragtime music like Scott Joplin and classic stuff. And so I had the idea, you know, we were trying to come up, like you said, we always start with this sort of sound collage or long, you know, annoying intro to people. So we were coming up with the idea, and I asked Nate Walcott to compose a rag, kind of classic New Orleans style, but then I wanted to kind of devolve, like unwind into more like Eric Satie suspended chords, melancholy. So he composed it, and then we shut down the bar one night, filled it up with our friends. Dan, the guy that played the piano, plays the piano. Nate plays trumpet. And then my ex-wife, Karina, who's still like one of my best friends, she does the intro in Spanish, so she kind of introduces the band. And then on a different date at my house, I had Karina and my mom come over, and we drank some psychedelic mushroom tea, and then I recorded them talking for like 3 hours, and then edited it into what you hear on the recording. So yeah, it was a little bit of an ordeal, but I think it came out cool. We always do that, like one to like ward off casual listeners.
It's for the real fans.
Yeah, but then also like. you know, try to get it in like a threshold, you know, like let people like walk through a doorway kind of thing.
The name of the album is Down in the Weeds, Where the World Once Was. Connor Oberst has been my guest. Connor, thanks for being with us.
Allison, it's great talking to you. Thank you so much. I miss New York. I hope you guys are good out there.
Thanks, man.